Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Now, without question, one of the sporting stories, in fact, by a distance, the sporting story of the weekend from an Irish point of view, is Sinead Diver finishing seventh in the London Marathon. We're delighted to say she joins us on the line. Sinead, you're very welcome. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
Where are you at the moment? Still London?
Yeah, I'm in Teddington. I'm staying in Daniel O'Sullivan's house, and I'm flying back to Australia tomorrow.
How is the body?
Not too bad, actually. I'm kind of surprised. I was pretty sore yesterday, but pretty good. I think the more marathons you do, you tend to pull up a bit better each time. So, yeah, feeling not too bad today, considering.
Yeah. How many marathons have you run now at kind of serious level at this stage?
I think I've done seven. I've been asked that a lot, actually, this weekend, and I've meant to check, but I think it's around seven, but I'm not 100% sure. Six or seven, something like that.
Okay, so the recovery from seven is proven easier than the recovery from the first.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, after the first one, I couldn't walk properly for, I think, 3 or 4 days. it's still difficult to go up and down stairs today, but, like, just walking around normally is fine, so, yeah, all good.
You finished seventh. People were watching it, I think, over the weekend. And I think there was a lack of awareness almost of your story in many quarters, because if it was an Irish athlete or somebody running under the Irish flag, it would have been mentioned well in advance and people would have been looking ahead to it. But suddenly there was this woman from Belmullet who I think only, you know, people who follow athletics knew your story. But suddenly for a lot of us, it was like this woman from Belmullet. She's leading the race and she's still leading 14 miles in. What the hell's going on here? Was kind of the reaction. So you ran 2:24.11, a personal best by more than a minute. Were you setting out to run a good time? Was this the aim? Like, give us the context of the London Marathon for you.
Yeah, I mean, the main aim was to get a qualifier for Tokyo Olympics next year. And I run for Australia, and marathon running is really strong there at the moment. So I knew I'd really need like a 2:26 or under to be in contention for a spot. Last October in Melbourne, I did a 2:25.11, and the weather was really bad, so I knew I could go faster. So I was actually kind of hoping to go maybe 2:23 rather than 2:24 yesterday, but it was actually really windy in the second half again. So I'm really happy with the 2:24. Like, it was, yeah, more or less what I was aiming for. Which is good.
And is that why you led from the front? That you obviously the pace wasn't quick enough for your liking?
Yeah, so there was, they generally organise pace groups for, you know, different, like they had a 2:19 group and a 2:25 group, but I, or 2:26, but I wanted to do around 2:22, 2:23, so I was kind of in the middle.
Okay.
And there was a few girls, the two Americans, Molly and Emily, and two Japanese girls. They were planning on running like 2:21, around that kind of time. So they were going to, the story was that they were going to form their own pace group. And my plan was to sit on the back of them, at least for the first half, because the first half is quicker and the weather was pretty good in the first half. But so I just went off like at that pace. Nobody came with me. So I didn't know what was going on and I didn't want to turn around, you know, to see what was happening. I just kind of thought I may as well just go up my own pace.
Yeah.
Like, I'm quite used to running on my own. And the pack caught me around, I think it was just after 5K. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. Like, I'll just sit in here now for when it gets windy. But the Africans were leading and they like to go really fast and then really slow, really fast, really slow. So we were like dropping like 3:10 per kilometer and then jumping, slowing down to 3:45, and I just don't like that style of racing that early on in the marathon.
Okay.
So I decided to go out to the front again and just do my own thing.
Set your own pace.
It worked out, which I'm lucky because, yeah, I would have looked pretty stupid if it didn't work out.
Yeah. How much more energy sapping, as a matter of interest, is it to be leading from the front as opposed to tucking in behind a pack when you're running that many miles?
Yeah, it's much easier. I don't know why. It's just much easier to run with a group.
Yeah.
If you have a pacer, it's much better. But, like, you probably saw, like, the three pacers for the 2:19 group were, like, miles ahead of everyone with nobody with them. And then there was another pacer. Actually, I think they were the pacers for the lead pack and then another pacer for around 2:19. And she wasn't pacing anyone. So at one stage, I said to her, do you want to just pace me because you've got nobody else with you?
Yeah.
But I don't think she fully understood me. And she kind of half-paced me for a little bit, but then would kind of surge when I caught up to her. So yeah. I don't know what was going on there. Kind of helped for a little bit.
It sounds like a weird race, okay? It sounds like everybody was just a little bit off.
Yeah, it was really bizarre.
Some funny bits going on. I appreciate this is just your seventh marathon, but I'll ask in that context anyway. Is there generally much talking going on about pace and you're asking people to your left and right, how are we doing here? Is this a bit slow? Is this a bit fast? Is there almost a level of cooperation for a certain portion of the race?
Not really, to be honest. I mean, some people do kind of form a group because it's better, you know, if you swap the lead and that. But it's often very difficult because people can be quite cagey about what their ambitions are. So I think, like, Emily and Molly would have had a plan because they train together. And then their coaches kind of talk to the Japanese girls' coaches and, you know, they kind of say, oh, we'll go around this time. And then you just kind of see how it works out. But there's generally no chatting once the race starts.
Okay.
Like, it's generally, yeah.
From what I can gather, this doesn't completely lock down your ticket to Tokyo, but it gives you a really, really strong chance.
Yeah, I mean, there's still, like, the qualifying period won't finish until, I think, next April or May. So there's still plenty of time for people to, you know, to now try and beat that time. But it's the fastest time in Australia for 12 years, so it's unlikely that three people will come out and suddenly run under that.
Yeah.
But then again, you'd never know, so yeah.
And Sinead, will you try and run again and better that time, or is that you done?
I'm kind of in a good position now because I have that time, which should get me there. But I would actually like to do another marathon. I'd like to go faster. Like to get closer to 2:22. So, yeah, I kind of would like to do them maybe at the end of this year or maybe January next year.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't do anyone later than that because I want to be ready. If I'm going to Tokyo, I want to be, yeah, ready for it.
Yeah, and fresh. I think your story has been well told at this stage in that you're 42 years of age and you picked up running at 32 after the birth of your first child, pretty much in a recreational way.
Yeah. It was just this kind of a team race that was on in Melbourne, and my sister had a team through work, and they were missing one person, and she asked me if I'd just help them out and do this race with them. And then one of the guys thought I was pretty good for someone who didn't train, and he suggested that I join a running group, and I did, like, once a week and stuff, but it took me a while to get into it, and they were a recreational running group. So I was with them until the start of last year, and then I switched to Nick Bedeau's group, the Melbourne Track Club. So Nick is Sonia's husband, and they're like an elite training squad in Melbourne, well, in Australia. So that made a massive difference to me, and I improved a lot last year. So yeah, it was cool.
And to join that group, Nick's more elite group, do you have to show them what you can do, or is anyone welcome if they can hack the pace, or was that a difficult group to join?
No, I think anyone's welcome. Right. You know, if you're at that kind of level and you're committed, and I guess I had an advantage in that I knew Sonia through, you know, being Irish, and then I got to know Nick, and I just asked him if I could join them for training, because in the other group I was pretty much training solo all the time, and it's much better. You just improve a lot more if you have a group to train with.
Yeah.
And he was totally welcoming, and the group has been fantastic. It's been really, really good for me, so I'm delighted that I made the move.
It's the most incredible story, really. Like, it's astronomical that you start running in 2010, and then in 2012 you win the Australian Half Marathon, and then your debut marathon is just 5 years ago, the Melbourne Marathon, where you finished second, and you run 2:34:15 in that race. Like, it's just a bit... Yep. Extraordinary. I would understand if, like, a gifted lacrosse or ice hockey player didn't quite somehow find their sport, you know, they mightn't come across it, but you would just think somewhere along the line that a running talent of what, you know, the level we're talking about with you here, that natural fitness or that natural ability you clearly have just would have emerged somewhere. Like, I'm talking the school sports day here.
Oh yeah, well, so I went to, it was primary school that I went to, we didn't have any sport. There was no sports days or no PE or anything. We would randomly have, like, a bit of sport, but the focus was academics. And it was exactly the same in the secondary school I went to. It was a really good school and everything, but it was run by nuns, and they were kind of a bit conservative about girls playing sport. So we were allowed to play basketball, but that was it. And I think for the 5 years that I was there, we had one sports day. So I just never got into it. I didn't know anything about athletics, or we didn't at the time when I was growing up, we didn't have an athletic club or anything. Mm. That's all changed now. And they started one up, I think, a couple of years ago. And it's doing really well. And there's loads of kids in the community in it, which is fantastic. And then as a result of me not having any, I loved sport and I didn't have any avenues to do it. So I ended up doing PE in Limerick. Right. And then when I get into that, it was very much across all sports. There was never really a running focus or anything. And then at that stage, I was like 17 and you were almost, it's bizarre to say it now given my story, but you were almost expected to already have found your sport.
Yes,
by
of course.
Then. So
yeah.
When I came and, you know, they were asking me, what's your sport? I was like, oh my God, like, I don't have one. But I just said basketball because that was the only thing that I played. But I was pretty good across most sports. And then I kind of focused on basketball for a few years. And until I moved to Australia, actually, I still played basketball for a few years. So it just kind of worked out that way. It's just, I never had any mentors in athletics or anything. And yeah, it's unfortunate in a way, but I think I'm making the most of it now.
No, you sure are.
You sure are.
And I guess you could argue it's worked out pretty well. And geez, going to the Olympics in Tokyo should hopefully be an amazing experience. There's no bitterness in your voice, but God, what a pity. You know, isn't that dreadful? And how many other girls out there of a certain era were probably denied the opportunity when they might have been very, very, very good at lots of different sports?
Yeah, I mean, it is a pity, but like the thing with athletics as well is often, I mean, the story for a lot of girls who are talented, they get into it too young. They get too serious about it too young. And then they go through 10 years of like constant injuries. Mm. There's so many examples like that as well. So in a sense, had I got into it earlier, maybe that would have happened. I don't know. I don't really have any regrets. I mean, I'd love to think that this could be my career for the foreseeable future. But I know that, you know, I'm time boxed a little bit,
yeah.
Given I'm 42 now. So, but yeah, I'm going to make the most of it for as long as I can.
Yeah, absolutely right. And at 42 then, so I don't know when long distance runners start to go rapidly downhill or how this all works. And I guess it's personal to everybody. Is there a sense with you that you have a certain freshness in your legs, even though you are 42, that like you know, we're talking about literally miles on the clock, you mightn't have as many, lots of people around you, so you actually could go on a bit longer?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of athletes would have like a career of 20 years. And I think after doing athletics, especially long distance running for that length of time, your body fatigues. And as well as that, people have almost achieved what they want to achieve, so you just get mentally fatigued from doing it as well. Like, it's a hard grind, even though I love it, it's still really, really tough, and you have to put everything into it. So I think people are ready to kind of move on from it after 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm in the thick of it now, and I'm not ready. I haven't achieved everything I want to achieve yet. I've only been running seriously for a few years. So, and I certainly don't feel any different now than 10 years ago. So I don't feel like I've started to slow down or degrade or anything yet. Like, I still feel young. And yeah, I feel that it doesn't really matter at this point. Like, maybe in, I don't know how many years. I mean, I think since I started, people have been telling me I'm too old. Mm. And 10 years on, I'm still getting better and better. So I'm glad I didn't listen to them. And I'm going to continue that for as long as I can.
There's a lot about your story. I think if you listen to people, it wouldn't be quite working out the way it is. So I'd keep ploughing on the way you're doing it, and that'll be just fine. And can I ask, so when you start at 32 in this very casual way, and you haven't really run much before, it must be the most extraordinary experience to get really, really good really, really quickly. Like, how early on when you're plodding around the track with other recreational runners do you realize, well, I don't know, I can go faster than everybody around me, and it's not killing me, or I'm not breathing as heavy as everyone around me? Like, was it almost an instant thing where you kind of realized, geez, you know, 2-3 weeks in, I'm almost as good as this lot who've been doing it for 10-15 years?
No, it wasn't like that. I mean, it seems all of a sudden, I guess, from people who haven't heard of me before, but 10 years is still a long time. Like, and you gradually improve every year. I think when I started, I did, people were really, I don't think they believed me that I hadn't done much running before, because I was as good as, say, in the group that I was in, as good as the top girls in that group.
Yeah.
But I had nothing to compare it to, so I didn't know, I don't know, yeah, like it didn't, it, I don't know what, it didn't come really easily or anything, but I think I had, I was pretty good to start with, and then, but it took me a few years to train properly, and it took me a few years to decide that I actually wanted to do this. Like I was still, I would do fun runs, or I'd do the Victorian championships, like in cross country and road running, and I would win a lot of those. It kind of gave me confidence. And then when you start winning at state level, next thing you think about nationals for a while.
Yeah.
And then suddenly international is the next thing. And you just gradually build up over a few years. But it takes, and I remember Sonia saying it takes like 7 years to kind of hit your stride.
Right.
And I think she's right. Like, it's, yeah, like you can be good and stuff, but then you really need to focus and be serious about it and do all the right things and kind of put everything into it.
Yeah.
Which I've done, and you know, it's working out, which is good.
Yeah, so look, I guess having Sonia O'Sullivan and her husband to advise you on training, as you said earlier on in the conversation, radically transforms things. So like your training now,
yeah.
I was reading that you're up to like 180k a week, and like, can you talk to us about how that's working out? Because I think you're still working as well in IT.
Yeah, so I work 4 days a week over 5 days. So I work like 11 till 5 and 11 till 6. And so that way I can get training done. I do most of my training early in the morning, and then in the evening there's only like a second run to do, like an easy run. So usually before the I've got two kids as well, Eddie and Dara. So before they go to school, I'll get my training done and then get them ready for school and that. And I've got obviously Colin, my husband, helps me out with everything as well. And then go to work for 11, home for 5, and like the day is, every day is full, and it's, you know, there's never any downtime, which I think is not good in that I should be getting more recovery. I think that's one area that I'm struggling with, just not enough downtime.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is what it is, and I'm making the best of it, and I'm really enjoying it. So, yes.
Yeah.
I'm continue going as I'm going.
And are you getting any funding now from any Australian sporting federations?
Just as of this year, I got given a small bit of funding.
Right.
But there's like zero, there's not much money in athletics.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. It's not like, I think that's a recent thing. I think there used to be better money, but now a lot of the focus has changed to like AFL in Victoria is much more popular than, you know, a running meet or anything. Everyone's about the footy, and athletics is really kind of almost going a little bit backwards, which is unfortunate. So I hopefully it'll be great if it went through a bit of a revival. I mean, Kit Doggy is definitely helping us out there. He's, you know, everyone's really excited to see him race and stuff. So it'd be great if the popularity of athletics could come back a bit. And yeah, there was more media around it, I think, but it doesn't get much attention really.
And so I saw you were at the 2015 World Championships in Beijing. You might have run for Ireland at that period, but it seems that they extended the standard by 45 seconds, or cut the standard by 45 seconds. So that was kind of the end, really. You were 38 by then, I was reading in a piece with Ina Reardon, and you'd been in Australia 15 years. So you dual citizenship. So I suppose it made sense on a whole host of levels to run under the Australian flag.
Yeah, I mean, like there was, I think when I qualified, you know, I just presumed I'd run for Ireland because I'm Irish.
Mm.
But then after a month later, when they changed the standard, I was really shocked. I just didn't think that you could do that in the middle of, like, it was towards the end of the qualifying period. And I was really upset by it. But then I was like, well, I have an option to run for Australia. And like, why wouldn't I?
Mm.
I'm there like 15 years. My kids are Australian. You know, I have a strong allegiance to Australia as well. And Athletics Australia gave me the opportunity, and I was delighted. I absolutely wanted to go to my first ever World Champs. So it's strange how it worked out. And I kind of, like, I understand in a way where Athletics Ireland was coming from. I mean, I was just this 38-year-old who had posted one good marathon time and they didn't know anything about me. And yeah. they kind of, I don't know, there was probably funding issues because there always is in athletics. And yeah, they probably didn't look that much into it. I think now it's kind of coming to it, like becoming more known, my story in that. And they're probably regretted a little bit. I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard from them, but yeah, you know, it is what it is. And yeah.
Oh, no, it's definitely...
I'm not bitter about it.
No, I know. Well, why would you be? Like, you've kind of got the support of two countries, because certainly here on Sunday during the race, I got a real sense from Twitter, which is as much of a snapshot of what's going on in the country as anything, that people were following your progress. And obviously Australia are behind you as well. I had a look back. Ireland didn't actually send anyone in 2015 full stop to the Beijing Games.
So there must have been a decision around that, like not to. I think as well, like Beijing was supposed to be really, really hot. So they probably thought, we're not going to send people to do the marathon there in really hot conditions. It could have been that side of things as well. So like, who knows? But yeah, this is how it's turned out. And it's actually, yeah, as you said, I do have the support from two countries. So like, I feel really lucky actually to be in this position now. So I think it's worked out well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What took you to Australia in the first place back in 2002?
Oh, just myself and Colin wanted to just go there for a year on that working holiday visa. Just to travel a bit. Like, we went to Thailand before it and then landed in Australia, and we just really liked it there. And after we had Colin got a visa through work, and then we got our residency. And I think once you start making friends and you're settled into a job and stuff, it just kind of, every year we just rolled on. And then as soon as the boys were born, like, you know, we were pretty much settled there. And it's 17 years now, so yeah. It's like time has flown by, though.
Yeah, it always does. It always does. I can only imagine what your 15, 16-year-old self would say if you showed her a little snapshot of how life was going to turn out.
Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, very bizarre. Yeah.
Well, listen, congratulations. It looks like you have a great chance of going to Tokyo. I'm sure we'll talk to you in the meantime before then. I think safe flight home, put the feet up, and big congrats again. Everybody here was thrilled for you, Sinead. So it's an amazing story. Big congrats. Thanks again.
Oh, thanks, Joe. That's really nice. All right. Cheers. Bye.
Off the ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.